Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm Johnny DeRola. Brett is here because it's Friday. Hey, Brett, how's it going?
You know, it's going to be fine. You know, we have each other. What more do we need, Jahan?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Why did everything fall apart in like the last hour? Like the news has been pretty good. You know, I'm sort of depressed about some members of Congress and how I have to talk about it all the time. But things are like looking up, right? And I was recently, Brett.
Yeah.
You've been doing Fridays on the Damage Report for a very long time, and you used to be like the co-executive producer of the Damage Report. So you were here for a long time. I cannot even conceive of when we used to be here in the morning together producing, and then we'd sit at a desk and we'd have breaks and we'd wear pants and it was all professional. I just can't.
I can't either. We'll never be that way again. Especially because the show was an hour earlier. People don't remember that.
How?
When the show started, it started at 9 a.m. Pacific.
That seems
And I remember
insane.
Being like, I mean, it was a journey every morning. It was literally like that scene in the movie where someone smacks themselves back and forth in the face and is like, get it together, man.
And there was a lot of shaking each other.
Yeah. And there was like me walking outside. Like I in order to wake up, I needed to be outside in the cold, dark 5 a.m. world. Mm-hmm. Just like, that's get crazy. Some news together, idiot.
You know what I miss is having like Ben Mankiewicz on the show. And so let's say the show starts at 9. So it's 9:03. I'm in my first segment and I'm like, I wonder if he's gonna walk in at some point. That was always fun.
And him with like a full cup of Starbucks coffee that he stopped to get on the way. John, it's fine.
Stressed.
Like go back through. There's tons of times when John says, and here's Ben Mankiewicz about a minute and a half into the show. And that is Ben finally putting you see him like this. He has just put his microphone on it and has started to sit. And we stay on the wide shot because we haven't framed him up yet.
Yeah. Cause he wasn't there. Anyway, we'll get it. You know, we'll stick it to him more later on. But anyway, Brett, thank you for being here. Thank you everybody for being here. I know many of you are probably wondering what the hell is going on or what you signed up for, but that's, you know, it's just get used to it. So thank you for being here. We had a lot of news that we're gonna be talking about, including the garbage people of the week. I have not checked the voting yet for the community garbage person of the week. I think I know what it is. I'm pretty confident this week. I'm not generally, but I think I got a read on it. But we're gonna be talking about a lot of craziness. We're gonna be giving you an update on the pandemic, which still exists, by the way. We're gonna be taking a look at a photo that just boggles my mind, this photo that we're gonna look at and try to understand together how it was taken, but much more importantly, why it was posted. But anyway, before we can do that, we do have to get into our first story, which we're gonna talk about in just one sec. Did wanna let you know though, liking buttons, that's a great thing to do. Like those buttons, hit those buttons, let people know that we're live. And then we'll all be here together. And when we're here together, we can talk together. And if you send us messages, we'll be reading them as we go. And with that, Brett, you ready to do this thing?
Sure.
People believe a lot of crazy things. It seems to be pretty popular these days. And in an attempt to fight back against that, we've got another edition of Myths of American Politics. In In this segment, we're going to be talking about the filibuster, which is pretty important right now. A case could be made it's the most important thing. But people's willingness to see the filibuster go away, I think, is being affected by some misinformation that they have around it. So I'm going to toss to Brett Ehrlich, who not only made that intro you just saw, but also produced an amazing little bit of information about the filibuster. Brett, what have you got?
I just want to start off with this insane concept. John believes in the myths of American politics as a segment that really debunks a lot of the stuff that you see being messaged around that is just absolutely not true whatsoever. And this idea that the filibuster has been around since the dawn of time and is essential to heightening the discourse and making the Senate the highest, you know, form of a deliberative body in the history of the world is absolute hokum. It is false. Everything they say about the filibuster is absolutely wrong, and we're gonna prove it right now. Here is the first myth about the filibuster. The filibuster is in the Constitution. It is not. It couldn't be further from the Constitution. The mechanisms that allow you to set up the filibuster are in the Constitution, but the filibuster is even further removed from the Constitution that it is not even a rule in the Senate, as the Senate is allowed to make rules. And we'll get into that in a second. But first of all, John, did you hear that the filibuster was in the Constitution and people are kind of pretending that it is?
They certainly believe that it is a core thing. It is a core part of the Senate rather than an almost ever changing set of circumstances, norms, traditions, and sometimes rules that have developed over time and been modified over time, including very recently. People, that's the context, but people don't think that. They think, oh, it's from Lincoln times and it's just been around for forever. So how dare you consider actually changing it? No, it hasn't been around forever and it does get changed from time to time. Changing it now would just be more change to something that has always been changed.
Absolutely. And then let's go to myth number two, which is maybe it's not in the Constitution, but then it's been around since like the very early days. No, 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 my friend. The term filibuster is like 70 years younger than the United States of America. Senate.gov lays out this. The term filibuster, from a Dutch word meaning pirate, which already when you hear that it means pirate, it makes sense that Mitch McConnell would defend it, but it just means pirate. It is, how could it be a good thing? And pirate. It says became popular in the 1850s when it was applied to efforts to hold the Senate floor in order to prevent a vote on a bill. Just to give you an idea of how the filibuster is not like a sacred thing. It means pirate. And there's something important about the 1850s.
What's just a decade like any other? What's going on in the 1850s?
The Civil War is like, you know, here. And it has to do with that. The history of the filibuster is frequently people trying to keep civil rights from happening, which is insane because the Bill of Rights is the thing that protects the rights, the actual rights of minorities, of the minority. The filibuster is frequently used by people who are only in the minority because they're trying to hold up civil rights and act against the Bill of Rights. That's the problem. So there's that fact. It is not been around since the very early days.
And myth by the way, even if it really fast, even if it were, it could still be changed. But it wasn't.
Slavery was around since the very early days of the Constitution.
It was.
All right. But this is not about like even the difference between being someone who's about the, you know, what the founders intended versus what they wrote literally. Like this is even giving their framework of it, it's BS. Myth number three, the filibuster was invented on purpose as part of a grand plan to make the Senate the pinnacle of deliberation. That's kind of fusing two myths together. The idea that the people in charge of the Senate, when making the rules for the Senate, decided we should have some mechanism that allows a minority to hold up legislation, that is bunkum. A Brookings Institute scholar, so a right-wing scholar, testified before Congress and said, when we dig into the history of Congress, it seems the filibuster was created by mistake. And here's what happened. This is literally what she says happened. Aaron Burr first killed Alexander Hamilton. And after he killed Alexander Hamilton, he said, let's clean up the Congress We're the Senate, we should be awesome. And he basically looked and said that we have a lot of redundant rules. So he eliminated a lot of rules he thought was redundant. And rules that Alexander Hamilton actually said we needed. But once Alexander Hamilton was dead, Aaron Burr in, I wanna say 1805 was like, let's get rid of this. And he got rid of it. And as a result, nothing really happened. He got rid of a specific rule called the previous question rule. And no one knew that it would give rise to the filibuster as we know today. It went on for years and years and years until slimy politicians found a way to say, oh, without that rule, I can talk forever and basically wait out the clock. So we have to adjourn Congress before we can pass a bill. It was a mistake. And this is not my take on it. This is a conservative institution's take on the origin of the filibuster.
Yeah.
Now, the second aspect of that, to make the Senate the pinnacle of deliberation, the myth that the filibuster is this sacred thing that only gives rise to like speeches like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is BS. Here's an example. Alphonse D'Amato once talked for 23 hours and 30 minutes to delay debate on a 1986 military spending bill. Fine. He started reading the phone book during that one. He just started reading the phone book. So then in another 15-hour filibuster in 1992 that kept his fellow lawmakers entertained, he broke into south of the border down Mexico Way as part of his talkathon to stop 800 plus jobs from being moved from New York City to Mexico. Now, this guy started singing a song. Strom Thurmond took steam baths and had someone hold a piss bucket out the side. Oh, so that he could talk for 24 hours. There is no way you can say that this heightens the deliberative process when people are reading names from the phone book just to wait out the clock.
Yeah.
If your intent is deliberation and debate, this ain't it, bud.
Yeah, and ideally one would debate before the final vote on the bill. Attempts to stop the final vote on a bill don't have anything to do with debate on it. And you could have efforts to try to increase actual debate, maybe actually requiring the senators to spend a little bit of time actually at the Senate would be a great way to start that. Not having legislation crafted, you know, by lobbyists and then handed to senators to put forward. There are different things you could do if you wanted the Senate to be the world's greatest deliberative body, but that has nothing to do with the filibuster.
Yes.
Well, and by the way, really fast. So for instance, if the Republican plan right now is to block everything from being done, and they know that with the filibuster they can do that, why would they engage in negotiations and debate to try to convince the Democrats of anything? You know that you can just block it with the filibuster. So a case could be made that you could get more actual working together by getting rid of it.
Yep. And it's almost gotten rid of already, and I'll explain that in a second. But here's the other one. The myth number three is that the filibuster is talking for a long time. Not anymore, kids. It used to be, this is a crazy arc of the filibuster. It allowed people to talk forever, and that got so annoying and counterproductive that in 1917, senators adopted a rule, Rule 22, at the urging of President Woodrow Wilson, that allowed the Senate to end a debate with a two-thirds majority vote, a device known as cloture. So basically the way it stands now is you just say you wanna talk forever. You just say, I object. Mm-hmm. And you don't actually have to. You can hold it up. And to avoid all of this headache, there's this cloture vote that's like, no, two-thirds of us say that you can't do it. And yeah,
you're gonna say look, that in theory could be, wait, but then they can't do that. They can't start this cloture vote. That would be ending the filibuster, this grand tradition from the dinosaur times. But again, that is an attempt, that is a scaling back of the filibuster. When it was changed from a two-thirds vote to 60 votes, that was a change to the filibuster, making it more restrictive. When they stopped the filibuster for judicial nominations, that was a change to the filibuster, making it more restrictive. The entire last 100 years has been a gradual pruning back of the filibuster. So what we're proposing is perhaps a natural extension of that trend that we've been seeing for more than a century.
Yeah, and there's another myth that I didn't put in there. I think it's hailing in my house. There's another trend that there's another myth that we didn't put in there, which was that this makes the House of Representatives different from the Senate. But no, when the original when the original rules were written for the House and the Senate, they both had infinite debate. The House was just like, this is crazy. 50% of people can say that 50% of people can say that they want to stop it because that's ridiculous. And the Senate just had eliminated the rule that allowed them to do that. But yeah, you know, as I said with Aaron Burr. So and then here's the other aspect, myth number four, the filibuster then is there to protect the minority against the tyranny of the majority. Okay, this makes it seem like the filibuster is the only thing, the only check and balance in the Constitution. I will lay out that there are so many other checks and balances that are actually in the Constitution. For example, state, local, and federal courts, laws, and governments. We have a lot of different levels of government. We have three branches of government. Do you want to bring the hail in? We have three branches of government. The bicameral legislature. So there's the House and the Senate. It's hard to get both of those. By the way, the Senate already disproportionately represents Republicans. Getting a 50-50 share in the Senate is still a 60-40 breakdown, essentially, of the population of America favoring Republicans are overrepresented. We have the bicameral legislature. We have the Bill of Rights. That's the thing that is designed to protect the minority against the tyranny of the majority. It's not allowed to violate your rights that way. There are so many other things. All right, we have so much. I'm gonna take a second, but like, I don't know if you can see the hail in my hand.
It's hail. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yes. Well, let me also just jump in and say that to your point earlier about some of the most historic ways that the filibuster has been used, the idea that it's protecting the minority against the tyranny of the majority is pretty funny when, in general, it has allowed white slave owners in the past and eventually just white people to stop civil rights from happening. The idea that you would talk about this as being those sorts of protections just seems insane to me. And we're going to see some of that in the next couple of years as well.
Yeah. And to be honest, it has been used to protect, as DeMotto did, against crazy spending bills and shipping jobs overseas. But there are other ways to stop that stuff from happening. And by having a higher, so look at other things in the Constitution that have more than a 50% threshold. Those are like the last stops, right? It's getting rid of a president, it convicting and removing. It is amending the Constitution to add an amendment to the Constitution. It's changing the Constitution. And then with this filibuster thing, add to that any law. That's wildly different. A law which, yeah, after you pass it, still has to go, like, still is under the judicial review, still has to get signed by the president, still has to make it through the other house.
Yep.
We have the checks and balances against it. Exactly. And then this other one is the filibuster is rare. And John, you know that it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Like when we talk about, as I've laid out, just another reform to the filibuster, as many reforms have been done, what you need to understand is that just as Brett said, the tradition of the filibuster as a thing where you have to stand and face public scorn potentially, that's not true. It's also not at all what it was, even for the huge span of history where it took decades after the founding of America for a rule to be removed that sort of made the filibuster. It took decades after that for the first filibusters to actually happen. Decades after that, they started limiting it, and then they made it easier to limit. It has also been becoming more and more common. And so I want you to take a look at this chart. This is absolutely insane how many more filibusters there are now than there were even just 10 years ago, let alone 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. It is now an expected thing that applies to literally every single bill. And that was not the case during the vast majority of American history. In the past, it might be used to stop very particular pieces of legislation, as we've said, usually to stop civil rights from being passed. Now, as long as you can maintain 40 senators, you can stop virtually every single piece of legislation. And nobody can point to anything in the Constitution, any of the other, you know, founding fathers' documentation released at the time. They never intended that to be the case, but that is very much the case. They intended the government to function. And for it to function, the filibuster is going to need to be reformed. And hopefully, with all this great information that Brett has put together, if you're having talks with people and they have some misconceptions about the history and the current status of the filibuster, you now have the information to correct them.
Yep. And then just this is the final thing that you can take as the timeline on the filibuster to prove that it is not what people say it is. To review, from 1789 to 1805, it was the exact same as the House of Representatives. They could do, 50% of the people could say stop talking, and they had it set up so you could have unlimited debate. Then Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton and American democracy in 1805, and no one really noticed until 1841, when slimy politicians dumb stumbled into the loophole that gave rise to the filibuster, and the first recorded filibuster is in 1841. That is much later than 1789, when we were like, cool, Constitution, you're us now. Cloture then was invented, the shut the hell up notice, which took 2/3 of senators in 1917. Then that got so annoying 60 years later almost, when cloture was reformed down to 60 senators, so 3/5, and restricted only to legislation. When you hear about reconciliation, it's like, if it's a budgeting thing, you can do it because we got to get the budgets passed. I can't believe we're quibbling over that in a crazy 60-40 breakdown way. 66, 33 breakdown way. And that happened in 1974. So the filibuster as we know it has only been around since 1974. And then here's the final part of the timeline. People pretend myths are real. See also electing US senators, which, by the way, people think we always voted for our US senators on an individual basis. That too has only been around since 1917.
Yeah.
And it used to be your state legislature that chose your senator. So there's so much about America that we pretend has been around since forever, and it just absolutely, provably, undeniably has not.
Exactly.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Quick little update on the COVID situation. The pandemic still very much awful in terms of deaths, with the most recent reporting from the COVID Tracking Project listing over 4,000 deaths. Once again, we have had many days above 4,000 deaths. And I mostly say this because, again, it doesn't seem like this is what most of the media is talking about. But despite that, there is some good news here, including the fact that once again tests were over 2 million. And that is good, especially because there is some reason to believe that the rollout of the vaccine has cut back on a little bit of the testing capacity. So keeping it above 2 million while vaccines are going up is a good thing. Also, we are now down to 155,000 cases, down to 155,000 cases and 104,000 people in hospitals. Hospitalizations are apparently falling pretty much everywhere because cases are falling pretty much everywhere around the country. You can see in this chart, you're gonna see the breakdown by region. The issue is that so far, and perhaps this will correct itself a bit in a couple of weeks, the deaths are not dropping equally. You can see that in the South, they're still going up, and you can see in the West going up as well. So in the South and the West, things still not looking good. And I wanted to remind everyone that we're here in California, part of that West, a pretty good sized part of the West actually. And we just sort of reopened again, Brett. Isn't that exciting? I mean, we don't have any space in our ICUs, but we've reopened.
Great. I'm fine with it.
Gavin Newsom.
Gavin Newsom, in my analysis of it, it's so tough to tell why anyone does anything, but it seems like Gavin Newsom didn't want to be on the hook for a statewide decision. So he decided to kick it down to the regions and let the regions decide how they were going to reopen. And LA still is on a very high level alert in the south of Los Angeles, south Southern California, and we are the least capacity available in terms of ICU beds. In the north, it's like 20% still available, which is why he would peel it back. So depending on how much you like or hate Gavin Newsom, you're still right to think he's a piece of garbage for going to a fancy dinner with people, but amid all this in person. But you know, it makes sense if different regions are experiencing different volumes of this, then you should act accordingly.
Sure. I would also say that those regions prematurely reopening is how you get those regions to once again have high case counts. That's the experience California's had a couple of times. But I just saw a super chat. A friend just lost both parents this week to COVID. Absolutely devastating. Thank you for letting us know. That's terrible. There is a little bit of good news, perhaps. A couple more vaccines are rolling their way through to possibly being approved. We have information on the Novavax vaccine. Apparently, the two dose, it's one of those that requires two doses, was around 89% effective in preventing COVID-19 illness, which is good. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine's efficacy rate apparently dropped from 72% in the US to 57% in South Africa, perhaps because of the presence of a highly contagious variant. That is not what you'd like to see. Apparently, it also drops some of the others a little bit as well. But as the virus continues to mutate and new parts or new versions of it are cropping up, the idea that a significant drop in vaccine efficacy could be there, that's gonna be something to worry about. It seems like some of the others are a little bit more resistant to it, but that one you lose quite a bit there. But anyway.
Johnson & Johnson's a one dose, and they're advertising it as 66% effective today. So yeah, it ain't easy out there. And I totally get your point about them wanting to change, but you can still keep a high level of closure in those regions of California. Like that can still happen.
You it's just can,
not a statewide issue. But that Johnson & Johnson, it's terrifying about all of these new strains. You want the vaccination to happen as quickly and efficiently as possible so that you can get out ahead of it. And so much of this relies on people needing to be vaccinated en masse to kind of get ahead of the curve. And hopefully that can happen, but it hasn't yet.
Yeah, and really hoping the daily vaccination numbers were at like 1 million shots administered, which again is not the same thing as 1 million people getting it. We really need to get that number up and hoping that February is the month where that really ramps up. We'll see if the invocation of the DPA is gonna be successful in doing that. Axios has a story that I could not find more frustrating, and in it, they have this group that they're talking about, the Mischief Makers. Now, if you've been paying attention to Congress, you probably have an idea of who should be in that group of mischief makers, right? I mean, there's some seriously insane people in Congress. But no, they are not just talking about the Marjorie Greens. They have a bigger group. So they say, we're calling this group the Mischief Makers, members who threaten to upend party unity, the theme eclipsing Washington at the moment, which it's not really, but and potentially jeopardize the Democrats or Republicans' position heading into the 2022 midterms. So what they're saying is unity is a good thing. We've got some people who are potentially bad for it. And the Democrats or Republicans could be undercut by these Mischief Makers. So who are the Mischief Makers? Well, for the Republicans, you've got people like Marjorie Greene. She's just come up with a conspiracy theory. She believes it and she's posted about it online. Literally the craziest stuff in the world. We've got some more stuff we're gonna be showing on the show today. You've got Matt Gaetz. He's the guy that mocked concerns about the coronavirus, wearing a gas mask on the House floor, that sort of thing. Thomas Massie apparently made a lot of enemies by repeatedly objecting to coronavirus relief legislation and forcing members to travel back to Washington amid the pandemic to deal with it. Louis Gohmert. I mean, it's been years of this stuff. He had a tooth fall out during an interview recently. That was fun. Mo Brooks led the push to oppose certifying President Biden's victory. So what you have there is a mix of some just bad Republicans, some out and out conspiracy theorists, and people, most of them, totally willing to end American democracy and just say the Republican gets to win no matter what actually happens. So that's the Republicans. But really fast, before we jump into the commentary, they want this to be a both sides thing. So who are the Democratic Mischief Makers? Well, You probably already know AOC and other members of the squad like Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley. Why? Because they broke with leaderships on crucial votes in their collective effort to shift the Democratic Party leftward. You have Jamal Bowman, who voted against a waiver for retired General Lloyd Austin to serve as defense secretary. The mischief there is allowing a former member of the military to do that. That's not supposed to be what happens. He is standing up for the traditional way that we have civilian leadership of the military, but he's a mischief maker. And Cori Bush, so she pushed back against the highest profile Democrat, former President Barack Obama, after he dismissed defund the police as a slogan. So basically the same thing. You got people who believe in Jewish space lasers, and then you have people who want us to combat climate change. The mischief makers from Axios.
Right, and the quote, when I hear mischief makers, I think of Willy Wonka and the chocolate factor. We are the mischief makers and we are the dreamers of dreams.
That is true.
Like, no, dude, these mischief makers make them seem like little impish scamps, but they're not. These mischief makers are people who, in the one category of Republicans, are trying to end democracy in America. And the mischief makers on the left are trying to bring it to more people in America. Like, those are two completely different things. And there's so much more wrong with it the more you unpack it. But like, Mo Brooks, mischief maker that he be, right before people stormed the Capitol, said, it's time to start taking names and kicking ass.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and then Rudy Giuliani got up there and said, I want a trial by combat. And then Donald Trump got up there and said, let's march down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yep. Mischief makers.
Mischief makers that went into the halls of Congress and the floors of the two sacred chambers we're trying to defend and said, let's hang Mike Pence. And they wanted to, we have evidence that they were saying, I want to kill Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. And these are the people, they don't mention Boebert. For some reason, they add Marjorie Taylor Greene.
That's true.
But not Boebert, alongside Thomas Massey, who is like an eccentric millionaire, but like off the grid, you know, millionaire. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert has been accused of, and I can't believe I haven't been able to prove or disprove it yet, leading tours the day before, saying it's about to happen, and people are going to come in and do all this stuff. This is wildly different. Their crazies are trying to end America. Their crazies are advocating to execute their colleagues. Our crazies, I almost tweeted this the other day, but like our crazies are trying to get you healthcare and make sure you can still vote in a democracy.
So the same.
Same. Basically. Same thing.
I mean that's what it is. That's what this article is. Axios, you know, which is, you know, they've got some good scoops. We use their work sometimes, but this is what it is. There's some new people on both sides, and they're all popular online, and so it's the same. You know, we're just gonna call it this. And that's the thing. Like, there are already people who are trying to make that a thing, pretending that this is the new squad or something like that, of these freaking crazy people who believe in satanic rituals of baby sacrificing. But Axios is like establishment, like accepted. They have all the access. They got their big shows and everything. And they're saying they literally created one term to encapsulate both of them. And so maybe this is just a one-time thing. Maybe this is this Treen author just put out this one thing, or maybe this is a thing, you know, because both of them are potentially jeopardizing their party's positions, you know. One, because they're talking about Hillary Clinton ripping off a baby's face and wearing it like a human skin mask. And the other, because they want to ban fracking. So it's the same thing. That is the message that's going to go out to all of the lots of people, an increasing number of people get their news from Axios. That's what they're being told about these new people, including Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush, who have been in elected office for like 3.5 days. Before people get a chance to really get to know who they are. No, they're the crazies. They're like Mo Brooks and Matt Gaetz. It's the same thing. It's just despicable. It's despicable. Maybe they have some other motivation, but it feels to me like this is a deliberate attempt to smear them.
And here's what's very frustrating, and this is a very important, and we need to really evaluate this, but this is the motivates my frustrations anyway. On the right, they don't have enough people to subscribe to the old ideas that the Republicans have been putting out there for quite some time. There's not enough people. So the Republicans, the reason that they're not moving hard to make sure that everybody distances themselves from the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Matt Gaetz, the reason that they're dragging their feet is because they need their crazies.
Yeah.
They need those people in there because there's not enough folks voting. When they say 74 million voted for Trump, they are shocked by that because they finally got people to go to the ballot box. That's why they're not convicting Trump. That's why they don't want him to run, but that's why they need to preserve his supporters' enthusiasm. That's why all these people are getting empowered. For us, for the left anyway, the center and the left, there are more people there. And so that's why the Nancy Pelosi's and the folks in charge are kind of dragging their feet and saying, I don't necessarily need the Jamal Bowmans. I don't need the AOCs. I don't need them. In fact, I would love a world where I don't have to think about them ever.
Yeah.
And that's what's so frustrating. That propels the frustration for me.
Yes. For more than a week now, it seems like we can't go a single day without finding out another insane, ever increasingly insane thing that Marjorie Greene believes. But this might be the craziest. So back in November of 2018, California was hit by the worst wildfire in the state's history. We've had many, they've been getting worse thanks to climate change, but the Camp Fire was the worst. It began on November 8th, and according to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, it burned a total of 153,000 acres, destroyed close to 20,000 structures, resulted in 85 civilian fatalities and several firefighter injuries, and it was apparently caused by electrical transmission lines owned and operated by Pacific Gas and Electricity. Scientists have noticed that climate change has worsened wildfires in places like California. So that is the actual explanation. But that is not good enough for some people, including the nation's craziest people, led by their new queen, Marjorie Greene, who believed it was this. Now, that's a gigantic block of text, and so I understand why you would not want to work through that, but we had to read it, and here is what they had to say. There's a bunch of stuff about Governor Brown and trains and how it's convenient that there were fires in California. It's also sort of traditional since they've been getting worse for a long time, but she says, oddly, there are all these people who have said they saw what looked like lasers or blue beams of light. I don't know anything about that, but I do find it really curious. PG&E's partnership with Solaren on space solar generators starting in 2009, they announced the launch into space in March 2018 and maybe even put them up before that. I don't know because I don't actually check things, I just say things. Space solar generators collect the sun's energy and then beam it back to Earth to a transmitter to convert to electricity. The idea is clean energy to replace coal and oil. If they're beaming the sun's energy back to Earth, I'm sure they wouldn't ever miss a transmitter receiving station, right? I mean, mistakes are never made when anything new is invented. What would that look like anyway? A laser beam or light beam coming down to Earth, I guess. Could that cause a fire? I don't know. I hope not. That wouldn't look so good for PG&E, Rothschild Inc., Solaren, or Jerry Brown, who sure to seem fond of PG&E. And so there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But she is saying, I really hope they have very good aim beaming the sun's power down to Earth. But what do I know? I just like to read a lot. But do you? I mean, I guess blogs are writing. It is English language, just letters in a sequence. But that stream of consciousness is Marjorie Taylor Greene, who had been generating some sort of audience online, saying that they accidentally beamed a massive blue laser into California's countryside, and that started the fire. And what evidence does she need for that? That someone saw light in the sky. If only there was a term for like light coming down and hitting somewhere. No one's ever heard of this before, but she has her sources. And also something about the Rothschilds, because it can't just be space lasers. It's gotta be something about Jewish space lasers, Brett. Conspiracy theories can only exist for about a minute and a half before they become anti-Semitic. That's sort of a physical constant of the universe.
Right, we used to do countdown to racism on viewer comments when I had my first job, where it's like, all right, so this is about puppies. How many comments before it gets racist or anti-Semitic? And the answer is always like 4. I tried to think through my feelings on this, and it's one of them that's just really encapsulates it is a lot of us are all trying so hard Like so many of us are trying so hard to do the research, do the work. When we're wrong, we admit it. We have a certain threshold for believing something and a certain healthy skepticism and judgment. But Marjorie Taylor Thomas does not. She does not have that. She just believes it. She just says it. When she was hounding, when she was hounding David Hogg, or there was another video that came out. Oh, when she's talking about having Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar have to redo their swearing in on a Bible because you can't do it on a Quran, and that's just like a new law that allowed you to. When four presidents of the United States have sworn in on not the Bible, you can swear in on whatever the hell you want. Where I just have that moment that Robert California had after listening to Kevin's ideas and thinking for a while they were some kind of hidden meaning of brilliance, when he realizes, no, you're just an idiot. You're just a psycho, bad, deranged, detrimental to the American concept idiot. She's an enemy of the state in a very real, measurable way, not a hyperbolic one. She thinks that America needs to become a theocratic, you know, some kind of dictatorship where you need to swear in on the Bible, because Republicans would never sign off on anything like that. Not to mention that the separation of church and state, that stuff is what America is based on. To protect your right to go off in a church once a week and do whatever the hell you want, believe whatever you want to say. But when it comes to the halls of Congress, we can't have you discriminating against people on those grounds, because imagine if the shoe was on the other foot. And that is something that she can't imagine, because the only article of clothing that she prioritizes is her tinfoil hat.
I wish I could propose a game in the same way that they had. Oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. But what won't Stanley notice? Yeah. What won't Marjorie Greene believe? I wish we could see. Like if I told her I have video evidence that George Soros is planning to suck all the oxygen out of Earth's atmosphere with a gigantic vacuum cleaner to send to the alien Jewish planets. Are you 100% sure she wouldn't retweet that? Are you really sure? Because I got a video for you. She believes literally every shooting has some other ulterior motive. Here she is after the devastating, deadly Vegas shooting. Here is what she believes was actually happening there.
Friends, I've got a question for you. How do you get avid gun owners and people that support the Second Amendment to give up their guns and go along with anti-gun legislation? How do you do that? Maybe you accomplish that by performing a mass shooting into a crowd that is very likely to be conservative, very likely to vote Republican, very likely to be Trump supporters, very likely to be pro Second Amendment, and very likely to own guns. You make them scared, you make them victims, and you change their mindset, and then possibly you can pass anti-gun legislation. Is that what happened in Las Vegas? Is that why the country music festival was targeted? Because those would be the people, would be the ones that we would relate to. Are they trying to terrorize our mindset and change our minds on the Second Amendment? Is that what's going on here? I have a lot of questions about that. I don't believe Stephen Paddock was a lone wolf. I don't believe that he pulled this off all by himself. And I know most of you don't either. So I am really wondering if there's a bigger motive there. And does it have to do with the Second Amendment? Because what's the best way to control the people? You have to take away their guns. So that's just my question today. This is Marjorie Greene with American Truth Seekers.
So really fast aside there, you heard her refer to herself as Marjorie Greene. That's her name now. I'm done with the Marjorie Taylor Greene stuff. She's trying to make herself sound more interesting. She's trying to do the AOC thing. No, I'm done with it. No, seriously, like we've got MTG right there. We're not doing that in the future. It's Green. It's Representative Green, unfortunately. That's the joke on us that she got elected. I'm done with it. She called herself that. I don't have to do any more than that. But anyway, so what she said is that devastating, deadly shooting in Vegas, I mean, she's not saying anything. She's just asking questions. Was it faked to take away your guns? And I love when people propose things like that, because the guns weren't taken away. So what happened exactly? The government, I guess, which weren't the Republicans in control at that point anyway? But anyway, let's pretend that the Democrats were in control. They went to all the trouble of gunning down dozens of Americans to take your guns, and then I forgot to actually take your guns afterward. Why do they keep doing all these false flags and getting nothing for it? It seems like a really bad investment of your conspiracy theory dollars. But she believes that. She is just saying, like with Sandy Hook and like with Parkland, that shooting in Vegas was fake. Why? Because it seems sort of bad that all these people with guns are shooting a bunch of people. So what if secretly all these shootings mean that you're more justified in having your guns? That makes people with very tiny, smooth brains feel more comfortable. And so that is what she put out, either because she actually believes it or because she knows that her prospective audience, after all, that isn't a video that she's putting out to get likes and clout and dollars and all that, that they might like to believe that that's true.
Yes, it's just the face on her, man. The look in her eyes, that intonation of, I'm smarter than you. And because of space lasers and this crazy, and it's because it's a show. And they say that on the forums, this is the best show I've ever seen. Cause dude, get Netflix, get Disney Plus, go watch some Disney movies. They've got some good shows on there. You don't need to bring that to the halls of Congress. And they talk about false flags all the time, but the only false flag operation going on is that she pretends she cares about the United States. She doesn't. She cares about being cool on QAnon conspiracy theory message boards. That's it. If she really cared, she'd do her research. She's a congresswoman. But it makes her feel so good and so important to feel like she's got that edge by asking questions. I love when they have rhetorical questions that actually have answers. They just don't want to go any further than that. This is their destination. Their destination is the question, not the answer. That's what's so frustrating. And this position of power. And I just don't know we tried to get through them with actual thoughts and actual facts and actual reasoning and actual logic. But I just keep thinking of that thing that might be misquoted from Mark Twain, which is, it's easier to fool people than convince them they've been fooled.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Because it's not like they're asking a rhetorical question, that questions can be answered. They love to believe. That's the big thing about conspiracy theorists, is that they think they're thinking more than you. They think they're researching more than you, and yet they come to the conclusion that space lasers are responsible. You already have an explanation. This guy did it. He shot up some people. If you just ask a question, you also need to demonstrate why that wasn't true. And the answer can't just be, I find it inconvenient. That's not good enough. But unfortunately, it is good enough to have that worldview to get elected. You can do that. She is, with the space lasers and the false flags, can a case be made that Alex Jones is crazier than her? They're crazy in the exact same ways. I remember doing a video on Alex Jones where he talked about how John Kerry shot a massive laser into a hurricane and it cut it into two different hurricanes. That is maybe crazier than the space laser thing, but it's basically the same idea. It's the elites have got lasers that are making stuff. And she believes that. And she's elected. So maybe the joke's on us. I don't know. I would love to see her expelled. I haven't seen any movement in that direction. But there ain't a thing. She's on the education committee. She's on the educate. That's an insult because it has to do with kids, obviously, but to the very idea of becoming educated. Anyway, that is Marjorie Greene for you. Stop calling her Taylor. It's Friday, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, this has been a very trashy week, but I've talked quite a bit about some people that seem like obvious choices. So I'm gonna mix it up a little bit, but this is legitimate garbage. We'll see if I can sway you. My garbage person is someone I have never had as my garbage person before. It is Chip Roy. That's the actual one they went with. And so I'm going to put him in here as I explain why Chip Roy is my garbage person. I mean, he's barely in the news, right? Well, it comes back to something we talked about yesterday, which was Ted Cruz's attempt to be pally with AOC. And she had responded about having hearings on the GameStop situation by saying, I am happy to work with the Republicans on this issue where there's common ground, but you almost had me murdered 3 weeks ago, so you can sit this one out. Happy to work with almost any other GOP that aren't trying to get me killed. In the meantime, if you want to help, you can resign, which I thought was very nice of her. She gave him actionable advice. She went on to say, by the way, and we didn't read these yesterday, while you conveniently talk about moving on, which he does, a second Capitol police officer lost their life yesterday in the still raging aftermath of the attacks you had a role in. This isn't a joke. We need accountability, and that includes the new senator from Texas. You haven't even apologized for the serious physical and mental harm you contributed to from Capitol police and custodial workers to your own fellow members of Congress. In the meantime, you can get off my timeline and stop clout chasing. Thanks. Which is just devastating and brutal for all the reasons we said yesterday. Now, some people had an issue. Not with the Capitol attack, the people who died, the people who are still dying, but with her pointing that out. And so Chip Roy wrote up this saying, it has come to my attention that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez sent out a tweet a few hours ago. No, you read it on your timeline, you jackass. It's come to your attention. What, did you press refresh? Yes, it's come to my refresh. Anyway, he says, blah, blah, blah. It's really bad. He's just engaging in speech and debate regarding electors. He's not, you know, trying to overthrow democracy, an effort that Chip Roy, by the way, was a part of. And he goes on to say, if Representative Ocasio-Cortez does not apologize immediately, we will be forced to find alternative means to condemn this regrettable statement. It is my sincere hope that we all stop this heightened rhetoric and move forward to actually do the work that American people sent us here to do. Okay, so in a time where we are trying to get the Republicans to take control of their representative who talked positively about Nancy Pelosi being shot in the head and Barack Obama being hung, and they say, what, like condemning or expelling? That's not a thing. And then AOC is like, hey, don't try to get people to kill me. Expel her, condemn her. She's got to be condemned for this unacceptable behavior. Oh, so they do get the idea that something can go too far. They just have very odd, upside down ideas of what actually is. And considering that he was a part of that attempt to end the American democratic experiment, his like formal letter to Nancy Pelosi calling for her to be condemned is just contemptible, absolute garbage.
I'm not convinced that Chip Roy was created by human beings, but rather the Onion. Like, it's very possible. Chip Roy sounds fake. He seems like the, I mean, the photo that you showed essentially looks like Area Man in an Onion article. I also like the idea of going, of being upset with heightened rhetoric while referencing speech and debate and defending the grand poobah of heightened rhetoric, speech and debate and faux pearl clutching, which is Ted frickin' Cruz. Mm-hmm. And all we're just trying to defend the people out there. Ted Cruz is a Princeton pleated short that suddenly that had aspirations for the presidency and sacrificed his integrity. And I'm sure like he's the actual one who is doing, who is like sucking the blood of virgins so that he can have powers and at the expense of his like external looks. As he's, it's the only thing that keeps his skin from just hemorrhaging organs. Meanwhile, his wife is a head honcho in freaking Wall Street. Yep. So I hate to break it to you, but if you're going to be upset with someone, you should be in defense of the United States of America. You should be upset with the people who sought to undo it. And if you're upset with people who take part in heightened rhetoric that gets away from the true spirit of American democracy and discourse, you need to look at Ted frickin' Cruz and yourself, Chip Roy. And the only thing worse than being the kind of comment that Ted Cruz is to be the kind of suck up bootlicker that Chip Roy is, which is like being like, if the parasite on American democracy is Ted Cruz, this guy is the pussy boil on the butthole of that parasite.
Get in, get, you know what you did, get in.
It's not my fault, but that's exactly what he is, Chip Roy.
Oh, yeah, he's bad. That's true. Whew, okay.
They're all just the Death Eaters.
Yeah, and he knows what he's doing, and I'm so sick of it. Like,
just the no. I just want, there's a scene in Tombstone where there's like a gunfight and Wyatt Earp, played by Kurt Russell, just starts saying no and just charges at these guys and lights them up. Now, I'm not saying gun violence, but I'm just saying that feeling. I just want to go, no, no. Yes. We all know what's happening, but my answer to you is no.
Exactly. Yeah, I want to roll up a newspaper and hit all of them on the head with it.
My garbage person of the week is Lauren Boebert. Lauren Boebert, who, you know, speaking of barnacles on parasites on the bottom of the boat, on the bottom of the barrel, Lauren Boebert. David Hogg had tweeted, they can put the fence around the Capitol. The real threats of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert will still be inside until the GOP leader takes a stand. She tweeted, David, please, we all saw how tough you were when questioned face to face. Give your keyboard a rest, comma, child, which is just sick and pathetic.
Wow.
And the idea that we all saw how tough you were when questioned face to face. He wasn't questioned face to face. She's talking about the video where Marjorie Taylor Greene, behind David Hogg, hounds him as he's trying to walk someplace. It wasn't face to face. You were the crazy person on the street chasing a kid who'd just been, whose friends had just died.
Yeah.
And you're doing something so much more pathetic. The only person who's acting like a child in this situation is you. Jesus. She's so gross. She's so disgusting.
Yeah. Can you put up that tweet one more time? Because she's sort of being consistent in one thing. When she says, give your keyboard a rest, child. Children exist for one reason, for Lauren Boebert's husband to expose his penis to. But we're all supposed to forget that that's a thing. All of her scandals just don't count, I guess. Yeah, no. And so, look, I get why they hate him, because he and the other Parkland kids are powerful figures for gun control that have so far been stymied at the national level because so many people are bought off by the NRA and all of that. But the idea that David Hogg is now being, for years now, is being hounded by these women who half of their personality is that they have to have a gun at their hip at all times is sort of perfect. I wonder how long she's gonna last.
I can show you photos of her with guns at her hips. Here's a great tweet that I saw from Abaraxis that says, what do you call Lauren Boebert's fashion style? And because all she's doing is like wearing, she's got a gun on her hip the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it's like this specific thing that I'm sadly super into, but it sucks. What would you call her fashion style? Or and you're allowed, John, you're allowed not to participate because I do have a bit for this.
Tell me your bit. What's your bit?
I would say that the kind of fashion style she has is Eastern European porn star starring in some kind of American themed porno called America Bang Bang.
Did you make that?
I just found it. I Googled America. No, I did make this. This is her fashion style. Some kind of Eastern European porno where she's kind of, someone saw a Sarah Palin porno and they're in the Czech Republic. They pretend that she's just someone, some American in streets. Come with me. And she's like, yes, I want America Bang Bang.
Oh my God. And by the way, considering the gun stuff and the stupid comments and the family drama, is anyone sure that we don't have like a time traveling Sarah Palin thing? Like, is anyone sure that she's not Sarah Palin 15 years ago?
It's a copy of a copy. That's the problem. And the answer, and so a lot of Americans have accepted the challenge. Like, if Republicans are going to be that ridiculous, we're going to just try to make our, we've had time to hone really good arguments that do hold up to reasonable people. And so when you have the victims of school shootings out there saying, here we go. When you have victims of school shootings going out there in front of everybody saying, this is what it was like. And here is the common sense gun legislation that I want to bring back to America that we've already had in the past and y'all were fine. Only a psychopath would hound a child on the street and pretend, and worse, pretend they won. And worse than that, go double down on it on behalf of their friend and say, you're the child, give it a rest. But
exactly,
the Republicans accepted that challenge. It was like, we'll just make our representatives those crazy a-holes.
And that's what they are. And so imagine who is prepping for their run. in the next couple of years. But we do have to get to the community garbage person of, don't put this up yet, the director. I want this to have some suspense. We can put it up after I read the first one. But 40,000 of you voted, which is mind-boggling. There was a lot of trash. Coming in at number 5 this week with 4% of the vote is Kevin McCarthy for flip-flopping on his response to January 6th. Coming in 4th at 6% of the vote, you have the Arizona GOP for censuring members who stood up to Trump. For much the same reason, honestly. Coming in number 3, we have Rand Paul with 7% of the vote for holding up impeachment proceedings. Number 2 with 20% of the vote is the Supreme Court for giving Trump a pass on emoluments, which leaves 62% of you voting for Marjorie Taylor Greene for threatening lawmakers on social media or for insert a reason, because there's a lot of them. And I knew it was going to be, by the way, we have that name wrong in there. It's Marjorie Greene, by the way. But anyway, so 62%, that is about as overwhelming a majority as we've had. Absolute garbage. I can't wait to find out what crazy things she believes because she saw it on 4chan next week. Stay tuned. We'll see that together. I know that this isn't news, but I saw this and now you have to. Here's a tweet that Matt Gaetz put out saying, I'm joining Lou Dobbs right now from Wyoming. Tune into Fox Business Now. And there was a photo attached to it. But look at the photo that he put there and then zoom in. What is going on in this photo, Brett?
I'm from Florida and I'm going to Wyoming where they have weather. And so I'm gonna sweater up. Everybody needs to watch the first like scene from The Swamp on HBO or Showtime, where it's Matt Gaetz getting ready for a press hit and he's doing his own makeup.
Like, oh no, I gotta see that.
It's one of those things where he thinks photo. He looks cool, but he doesn't at all. Like this photo. What are your hands? I don't know what to do with my hands.
Advice. Well, let's give credit to Cody Johnston because there's gonna be a few replies here. His was a Google search for what to do with my hands in a photo. But go back to the photo for 1 second because my theory, and Matt Gaetz, if you're watching this, this is a defense of Matt Gaetz. I don't think that Matt Gaetz actually exists. I think he comes in the form of a cardboard standee, and that is what is being posed in these images, because that is the only explanation for why a person would take that photo and then go with that photo. I don't know where to start. Is it with the sleeves? Is it with the vest? Is it with the hands? Is it with the forehead? I don't know. But Cody Johnson had a great reply. Brian Tyler Cohen says, did you make your suit? Which, look, we're all learning new skills during the pandemic, so maybe he learned a little bit of tailoring. And then Thomas Violence says, congratulations on your first day at school.
Good.
And look, is this the most shallow segment we've ever done? Yes. But is he one of the worst people in the country? Also, yes, because he's been mocking the pandemic from the very beginning. He still does it. Thousands of his constituents have died and he doesn't care because he doesn't care about anything because he's that sort of Republican. Go to the photo again.
Worst. Yeah, do it as we do it. It's just like, imagine he's the exact same as Trump, by the way. Like his dad was successful. He's like he's a legacy who that's not enough. He needs to dream bigger. I'm not just a local figure. I want to be a national one. So you'll love me, daddy. Won't you love me, daddy? Getting me out of my DUIs wasn't enough, daddy. And then just pull. It's a photo. You can pull your sleeve down a little bit. It should go to here.
And do something. I don't know. So here's what I want to do. We have a Twitter account, twitter.com/thedamagereport. And I want you, if you get a moment, to take a photo of yourself with hashtag Matt Gaetzing. And I want to see if, I don't think anyone can replicate how awkward that is. And now, does he want it to become a meme? I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about giving him what he wants, but man, it's like how they, you know, the shot of Marilyn Monroe where the thing is like blowing her skirt up. I had a film class that analyzed why people got so obsessed with that photo. And there's all these little details about why. I think this deserves that level of analysis because it is as awkward as a photo could possibly be. Maybe we finally found his true talent.
This is right when everyone popped out for his outdoor surprise party. All of his friends are there. You go to the previous photo,
they're,
you see all his
right
friends.
Off screen.
All his friends are there. Look at all his friends are there. What's over the head? What's popping into frame? Is that the boom?
Don't know. I don't know.
Like, oh God, he cleaned the whole, when he gets there, people clean the whole city out.
Just nobody wants to be near him. Anyway, Brett, thank you for joining us. We got to close right now, but it's always great to have you here. Thank you so much. And for producing that awesome segment.
Everybody watch Common Room tonight. It's going to be myself, JR, my wife, the Brooke Marks, and Judith Ben Ezra. And we're going to talk about the most awkward, the best stories we ever had with a stranger.
And thank you to everybody for watching. I'm gonna be doing the first hour with Rashad Ritchie and Charles Coleman Jr. So definitely check that out a little bit later on. And until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there. I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.